On Thursday morning, I woke up from a dream in which I was walking with a friend, and a young man came up behind me and grabbed me by my upper shoulder from behind. With the amount of pressure and contact and familiarity that someone I would know quite well might do. So I turned around, and when I did not recognize the young man, I became startled. In my dream, I said something like, "Hey!" And then I stepped back. The young man didn't hesitate, though, and he asked me a question. What is it about intimacy that keeps people from immediately connecting with one another when they first meet? I've had experiences when I've connected with someone immediately, but it's not usual. In the dream, of course, I shared some great line, which upon awakening had suddenly been lost. I hate that. But the gist of what I said was, in a much shorter, succinct way, there is a science of human connection and intimacy that helps us better understand what and how and why we connect, and in equal measure, what separates us. I did not know this young man, and so when he had grabbed me, I was not open to him in a vulnerable way. Yet I chose to ponder with him about what connects us. It was an interesting dream. What I realized because of the dream is that as far out as one can see or experience, there is inquiry. In large measure, I think many of us are wondering and seeking the answers to some question. I put forth that as conscious beings, we quest for knowledge and understanding. And if we're lucky, we find wisdom in books, through experiences, or in relationships with others. Each engagement, each query takes us on a journey of discovery. I've always known this, but there was something in that dream, maybe a flash of recognition of a fellow seeker, that literally woke me up. My inquisitive self stood holding an equation in mind, the framework of life, a giant blackboard, if you will, in the background, as we, humankind, endeavors to quantify and solve in a somewhat elegant manner. I often talk about our universe as a massive, multi-layered, four-dimensional puzzle that we each are an ever-evolving piece of. I often wonder if we were to bring all of our diversity of identity, knowledge, and nature, and our wisdom together, what we might reveal. Our connection? This thought reminded me of a piece of familiar mythology about the three wise men in the Jesus birth story. Here are these three guys, astronomers, right? Wise men in their own right, known as magi. They were studying the prophecies of the time and the unexpected appearance of a star in the sky. Since the Magi were professional astronomers as well as astrologers, the mention of their visit to Jerusalem was Matthew's way in his gospel of securing the testimony of top scientific authorities to authenticate the royal birth of Jesus. Matthew's scientific proof, so to speak. At the same time, there were shepherds, common folk, trusted caretakers who watched over the sheep of the field that were witnesses to the star and all of its uniqueness. One has to wonder why both groups of seekers were needed to follow the star to the manger in this story. Was it that some were compelled by their intuition to follow, while others by their desire to confirm and better understand what they saw in the stars? Unitarian Universalists follow the Magi. There is an equation in this mythology. One sees or experiences that something that catches our attention. We wonder why. Maybe uncover a question or a quest. We speculate and seek until we understand or until we come to a place where we are unable to proceed any further. Then, in retrospect, we infer the meaning of our findings and how it affects us. This is the journey. Metaphorically, the guiding star leads us on a journey to a place of deeper understanding about what makes us and our world tick. My take on this phenomenon is the journey and the process that is employed is in itself scientific in nature. Just curious, how many of you feel that you are pondering a topic in your life right now? Maybe you're working on a hypothesis or are on a journey of some sort towards some sort of knowledge or understanding. Look around. We're all wondering, right? We're all wondering. You may be fascinated by a subject, and you are or have been looking for clues, evidence, affirmation of a premise that is niggling your mind, compelling you to keep searching. I often imagine that our universe is but a cell, just a cell, in a much larger brain. We, humanity, are the inner workings of that one small part of that much larger whole, creating, imagining, being afraid, investigating, learning, evolving in all of our respective glory. We are truly just a small part of some amazing larger whole that we cannot see. It's a mystery. When I am in doubt, or when I am certain, I turn to scientific inquiry and reason. When I woke up from my dream on Thursday, I wanted to better understand the question that the young man in my dream had asked. Now, some aspect of me, I presume, presented that equation to me. I had a choice how I wanted to proceed. I could have turned to research. I always choose research, by the way. Or instead, I could have turned to my belief, my faith. It is our choice how we proceed. The question for me was framed in an equation. Intimacy. What is it? How do we get there? I sought and found in the pop culture magazine Psychology Today, an accessible read for the lay seeker, that self-disclosure is, of course, a fundamental feature of social interaction. According to one of the foundational theories in this area, the regrettably named, I love this, social penetration theory, repeated rounds of mutual disclosure are a primary means by which we bond with others. Erwin Altman and Dalmas Taylor, who originated this formulation in the 1970s, described it as a gradual process, like peeling an onion, whereby we begin with small and shallow disclosures and move gradually towards depth and breadth. As our partner reciprocates in kind, disclosure in this narrative is, to paraphrase Freud, the royal road to intimacy. Disclosure allows us to be more vulnerable, and thus we become more intimate. How and why does this question appear to me now, I wonder? And I begin to seek in its place the grand structure of life. This process of connection is something that cannot be fabricated or rushed. Interestingly, my doctoral study was in this realm of questioning. And I was like, whoa, I forgot. How do you forget your doctorate? Anyways, can relationships, friendships that are developed on the internet, supplant ones that are developed in the world of the real? That was my question. What I uncovered in my study through interviews and surveys was that if people want to connect on a deeper, more intimate level beyond their connection to self, they ultimately need to be face to face with one another. We need to be face to face. Yet the good news for the church, by the way. Yet the intimacy that we find in online connections with others does bring us to a deeper level of intimacy. And believe it or not, more rapidly than we do face to face. We disclose more intimately online and more quickly. From dream to equation to a resolved and scientifically supported answer. Voila! Do you ever wonder how many times we engage in the scientific method on a daily basis? My guess is much more than we realize. I believe that we truly rely on our rationalism and our science as our guiding star. Throughout history and all over the world, there are experiments going on and equations being formulated. It has been this way forever. Chris Shellen and I were discussing this just last week about the Jungian equation of self. Chris is seeking a deeper understanding as following his own guiding star. I believe that he will be unpacking some of this a bit more next week when he will be standing in this pulpit preaching to you instead of I. And I think it will be a pleasure to engage him in that conversation. I personally think that we each have a hypothesis about some portion of life that we're working on. And we slowly move forward. We refine our question. We look for support. We look for evidence. We study connection to the question. We study others' opinions. We study our environment, initially going with our gut. Maybe our intuition jumps in, but ultimately we rely on the presented evidence. We come to a premise or a conclusion. We follow our guiding star, held within reason and scientific method. We follow our guiding star, even those who rely heavily on religious community, on faith, have come to their decision about their faith following a scientific method of discernment. So even those who are faith-filled use scientific understanding. Because I rely heavily on reason does not preclude the importance of myth to me. If there is a Unitarian creed, Unitarian Universalist creed, it would be, listen carefully, I do not have to choose either or. I can and often do choose and both. Either or and both. This is what allows me to hold the tension between spiritual and scientific beliefs and the diversity of belief held by many. A myth that I'm interested in when I think about journeying and deep spiritual questing is King Arthur from Camelot's fame and his search for the Holy Grail. And yes, I do relish the Monty Python rendition of the story. Here is a powerful mythical king who is presumed to be born in any guesses to the year? I'm hearing. How about 465 CE, 11 years before the fall of the Roman Empire? Arthur was reported to have been supported and educated by a powerful druid named Merlin. Together they battled through Britain. It is historically held, actually, that between 485 and 496 Common Era was the period of Arthur's 12 battles, during which he gains the reputation for invincibility. In 496, the Britons, under overall command of Ambrosius and battlefield command of the war leader Arthur, defeated the Saxons at the siege of Mount Batten. A generation of peace ensues, and the story goes that Arthur and Merlin begin a quest for the Holy Grail. It is believed that the noble knights of the Round Table rode throughout the countryside looking for any signs or legends of the Holy Grail. It was believed that the Grail chalice was taken from the Last Supper, where wine was transubstantiated into blood. And it was the chalice that Joseph of Arimathea, Jesus' uncle, reportedly caught Jesus' blood in during his crucifixion. Joseph of Arimathea was believed to have fled to Glastonbury, England, after the crucifixion, ultimately defining religion for the conquered pagans. The Holy Grail, it apparently brings the bearer happiness, eternal youth, and sustenance in infinite abundance. And that piece right there made me think of lots of beer. I don't know why, but there you have it. Sustenance in infinite abundance. I was like, okay, it's got to be beer. Arthur of legend was compelled to travel seeking his quest. A process of elimination ensued for him. Well, if it isn't here, then it must be there. And if it isn't there, then it must be over there. And so they followed this quest on, and it went on for a generation. Arthur and Merlin's ultimate inability to find the Grail makes the quest unattainable. Thus, seeking something that is unattainable becomes a quest for the Holy Grail. When I was in England in the year 2000, the same trip in which I decided to become a minister, by the way, I made a sojourn to Glastonbury, to a place called the Chalice Well. And it's so called because it literally runs red, and the water coagulates like blood because of the iron content. I drank from the well, which is thought to have healing properties, and at the full moon each month, the wellhead is drained for cleansing. I was invited on a full moon in the middle of the night to descend a ladder into a well. Being one of a group of many women, stay with me here. Being one of a group of women, the Sisterhood of Avalon, we sang and chanted, standing in knee-deep water in a ritual to the goddess that protects the well. Happens every single month. It is believed that it is within that well that the Holy Grail chalice was hidden. I didn't see it. Myth, legend, scientific study, faith, belief, our gut, intuition, what is it that compels us to seek, to find, to make meaning of our findings and experiences? I personally heed that call that compels us to find out, the journey to find out, the study, the accumulation of data, review of data, the ultimate big reveal that's held within the results. If one would have said to me when I took this journey to Glastonbury and Tintagel that my life would be forever changed, I would maybe, might not have, could possibly have declined the opportunity. Yeah, it began as a vacation. After all, that changed my life. To explain the revelation in repose, I turned to Einstein. Einstein believed that one needed what he called combinatory play and reportedly experienced major breakthroughs during his violin practice. It is believed that activities that give you relative solitude free you from distraction and allow your mind to wander. Long walks, meditation or prayer, a good night's sleep, exercise, even your boring commute. Let your subconscious mind work its magic. Ever wonder why you arrive at your best ideas in a dream or in a shower? When we allow ourselves to combine and recombine all of our knowledge, experiences, conversations, and breakthroughs without intense intervention, we come to other non-conceived conclusions. In short, Einstein embraced his intuition and the reality that he couldn't know it all. He shared that the important thing is not to stop questioning. Curiosity has its own reason for existing. It is our curiosity that calls us over and over again, bringing us towards a destination, an unknown destination. When thinking about the search, many scientific researchers say that it is the quality of the focus of the hypothesis that is the most important thing, while others believe it's the quality in the wording of the questions asked of respondents. Others believe in the intention of the researcher and demand double-blind and triple-blind studies to limit interference of a desired outcome. Science, hypothesis, rational thinking. Einstein taught the world that science without religion is lame. I wondered where that word came from. Religion without science is blind. So we stand at a crossroads, being informed and seeking from a perspective of both and. As we think about our world and our journey of seeking, I cannot be the only one who lives like this. Questioning, seeking. We must allow ourselves to remain open to the revelation that is all around us. As human beings, this is our process to find out, to accept that inkling, a gut-presented hypothesis in the shower or in a dream. We may even hold the key ourselves to the answer, but we must confirm. It is our duty to follow that star, to see where it may lead and what it may uncover, what we might find, and then to continue the journey if we're still compelled to seek. What we are seeking is different for each one of us. Now, this is different than most communities. But what we learn, I'd offer, that is our unique piece of the puzzle that we must share to really know one another. We must be willing to share the journey, no matter how goofy it might seem, like being transformed in Merlin's Cave of Transformation, which is what happened to me. Who would have thunk it? We must answer the call to share the discovery, peeling layer by layer like that onion. I would bemoan. That is where we fall down as Unitarian Universalists. We love to seek, we love to uncover, but we don't love to reveal. Would I be right about that? Yeah. We are reticent to allow ourselves to be open to that strong hand on our shoulder, reticent to be vulnerable, to get intimate with one another. And I wonder if we're afraid of being judged because our journeys and beliefs can be so different from one another's, or are we just not willing to go there with one another? Here's the thing about being a Unitarian Universalist. We are all inspired to seek in some way or another, but in large measure, we follow different stars, compelled on different journeys. Other spiritual religious communities are compelled by a singular star, called to Islam or Sufism or Judaism or Buddhism or Taoism or Hinduism or Christianity or nature practices and so on. In this community, we have a gift, and it is that we each are open to search, but not so much allowing ourselves to be affected by others. My friends, we are traveling, each of us at different times and in different directions, and sometimes, not at all, but regardless of the star that we follow, we have an opportunity to inspire one another, answer questions, and be affected by one another. I don't think it's just us. I think that other people just go to church, spend time there, leave. But I think we can do it better. I'd like us to do it better. What I learned from that snippet of a dream that I had is that we have to be open to that hand of a stranger on our shoulder. That question that challenges us as individuals to go deeper. That is what being who we are called to be is all about. Answer the call, connect, affect, and be affected by one another. Do not be afraid. Our principles call us to covenant and support one another on this journey, regardless of how cray-cray or insecure it all may seem to be. Cray-cray, it's a saying, crazy, crazy, cray-cray. Anyways, we need to face into the vulnerability of it all and share. We have a responsibility to go through these moments of uncomfortable, to truly engage with one another, to peel back the layers of our respective onions, to see what remains, what separates us. My hypothesis on this is I think we will be transformed and amazed by what we find, and maybe even realize that we are not all that different from one another. Here is my challenge for you moving forward in this year. Dare to share. It's simple. It's simple. Dare to share. Let us take a moment in silent meditation. Before I continue, I'm going to do a very quick scientific test. Sarah. Are you with me? Sarah's with me. How did it feel for you to share your story?
Scary, vulnerable.
Yeah.
Kind of empowering and good to be open with people.
Everyone, how did it feel for you to hear Sarah's story?
Wonderful.
That is what I'm talking about. For this we pray, may it be so. Amen.